This episode is brought to you by the European Coworking Assembly. We are everything Coworking Europe. If you head to the Coworking Assembly website, you can connect with our Rural Coworking, European Freelancers Week, Coworking Symposium, Coworking Library, and Coworking Tools. Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to today's episode of the Coworking Values Podcast, which is the podcast of the European Coworking Assembly. And in the studio today, we have, I'm going to say it wrong again. I know we practiced, Piotrik.
Yeah, I prefer you stick to Piotr.
you can take me out. That's I'm always ashamed of my inability to pronounce people's names, and it's a problem in my family life as well. So what are you known for, and what would you like to be known for, sir?
Okay, so I'm known in Poland, at least, for being one of the faces of the co-working industry, or maybe, I don't want to see the face, but I'm one of the few people who's been in this business for over a decade. And I'd like to stay known for a guy who not only knows about the co-working, but also helps to introduce the co-working to the broader audience, especially the business audience, and trying to show the people how to use co-working in their benefit to make sure that their work productivity and creativity is blossoming.
That's ace. And we met in Poland, was it last October when I was in Warsaw?
I believe so. Yeah.
I was very grateful for that. And it was nice to meet in real life. Poland's a very favorite place of mine. So I pulled you in here today because I noticed on the Research Group for Collaborative Spaces symposium, you were talking about how to look at the past of co-working to help predict the future. So can you set the scene a little bit?
Definitely. So for the people who are new to co-working or maybe didn't explore the subject as much as I did, I think it's very important that when we are defining especially new trends, new ideas, we try to figure out how did we come upon them, where did they start. And in co-working, in my opinion, it's very important to remember that it started as an answer for the creative people's problem when they were working at home. And back then when the co-working was starting, so it was late 1990s, the new class called the creative class, right now we call them kind of like a freelancers or the solopreneurs, but back then the creative class had a very hard problem because they were on the outskirts of the regular labor market, because they were the people who weren't full-time employed by any corporation or clients. They were just coming every now and then to meet the clients and then receive the jobs that they had to do and then do them on their own. And usually they were doing that at home. And one of those freelancers, he was called Brad Neuberg, decided that he's fed up with working alone, and he created a space which was called Spiramus. And he said to other freelancing friends of his that, hey guys, I'm renting out this house, let's meet once a week so we can have the feeling of working together, of having our people around, but let's keep on working on our regular stuff. And this is actually the beginning of the co-working, and I believe that for many, many years, it was the core of the co-working industry in the business. And majority of the co-working spaces usually were quite small spaces, and they started off either being rented out as a small houses or maybe small apartments turned into the offices. And for many years, this is how the business was developing. Then there started coming big players into the co-working industry, and they started to change how the co-working businesses look like. So today, when you say to anybody about the co-working space, the majority of the people will probably don't think about the small local buildings changing to the offices, but they will think about more like a big office spaces who are just nicer office spaces. And right now we have big chains of co-workings, global marks, local marks, and this is actually what changed over the decades. So the co-working grew from the very small places into a very big international corporations. So this is setting up the background. You have to stop me, Bernie, and ask something else.
Yeah, I'm sort of, as you're talking, I'm thinking and listening, because the that that image of that's how I really got started in co-working was so I worked in a co-working space called the Innovation Warehouse in 2010 in London, and I discovered co-working with Tony Bacigalupi in when I joined Meetup in 2008, and I saw what he was doing in New World Cities, and I didn't know what it was, but I looked at it and was like, oh my God, that's what I want to do, isn't it? And it, probably if I'd been smart, then I would have opened a co-working space, I would have opened a co-working space, and I would have been one of the first co-working spaces in London. But I didn't know anything about real estate. I didn't really know anything about business. So, that's where we were. But then a bit later on, about 2011, 2012, I joined a freelancer group for Meetup. Sorry, a Meetup for freelancers called Kindred. And we met in a different co-working space every day. So it was... And that's how I got to know so many co-working spaces in London. And it was exactly those people. It was a group of people who had nowhere to go, or didn't want to work at home for all the, you know, lack of connection and mental health issues. And now I'm so into it, I miss that running into town to go to a co-working space with the little gang of people that we went to a different place every day. It was a lovely, lovely feeling, and one of my fondest co-working memories. And then when we go to just went on with any groups of people, I actually find it more fun running to a co-working space and sitting around a table with a group of people than I do like being almost like being a member of a co-working space. And I know you're not supposed to say that out loud, but it's the getting together and doing stuff together that I really enjoy.
Yeah, the socialization aspect of the co-working is very, very, very important. And there is actually nothing you can do about it, because that's a key feature of the co-working. And you can say that the byproduct of that is the serendipity effect, or just getting your creativity blossoming. Because like when you encounter so many different people and you talk about your ideas, your projects, or whatever you're doing, you always get a feedback from them, which puts you right back on the track and tells you, hey, something wrong with it, or hey, this is amazing and you should redo it or rethink about it on how to perform it once more. But yeah, but that was the beginning of the co-working. And to be honest, I also miss it, because right now, usually when I go to the big co-working space where I have a desk bought by my clients, I just sit down and work, and I don't have that much time to socialize. And of course, there is also the COVID effect. But yeah, I miss those old times as well, Bernie.
Yeah, there's something about there is this. I think it's a personal thing. There is this fine line between the office, like your co-working space being an office, and your co-working space being that lovely, gooey community feeling, and. Because when I've probably nonstop for the last 8 years, I've been a member of a co-working space, so like different spaces in London, and almost like even though that is definitely the most productive way to be, when I end up like going to the same place every day, I find like I do in this place here, I feel this thing. Oh, I'm not a part of a community, even though I am, and I love this place. I'm going to work. And
then you using that co-working space as a separate office, or do you have your dedicated desk, or maybe you're using some open space? How does it work?
I have a separate office that I share with someone else I met in a co-working space.
Yeah, and this is the difference I'm talking about in my presentation, because... the old co-working that we are missing, Bernie, is the open space where you just sit up, met other people, drank coffee, heard the coffee machine, heard the noises around you. And this was the core of the basic co-working spaces. What has changed with the bigger companies coming in is that they have introduced the flexible offices, or the shared offices, virtual offices, depending on the country, probably we call it a little different. But the co-workings today are actually those reception areas with the open space surrounded by the closed offices. And this is the biggest difference right now, because you don't have that many freelancers in the entire co-working space, but you have the percentage of the workers, of the employees, has grown dramatically in the past couple of years. And in my opinion, this is the biggest change that is impacting the entire industry, because when you had freelancers, the freelancers had something which you call independence or free will, which made them decide, okay, today I want to go to the co-working space. And they had also this flexibility, which had their inner flexibility, which told them, okay, today I'll go to work at 11, and if I have a good feeling, I'll stay there until 11 p.m. But on the other hand, when you have the full-time employees employed by the companies, it's usually that they lose the flexibility and independence in choosing their work place and work time. And this is actually changing the co-working industry a lot, in my opinion, because right now you have those people who are forced by their employers to go to the specific place and to work them from the specific hours, usually from 9 till 5 or 6. And it's also killing the creativity and the flow, because, well, like, I don't know how much you know about the flow or being in the zone, but once you get in it, you want to stay in that state as long as possible.
Definitely,
because if you lose it, there's no guarantee you will get back to it next day at 9 a.m. when you go back to work, right? So being the freelancer allowed you maybe to work 24 hours, but then you could rest how much you like. Whilst when you are employee, you have to go to the office and be there from 9 to 5, and it doesn't matter if you had a flow. At 6, you have to leave and come back another day and pretend you still have that flow and explore yourself.
That flow thing is, like when you said, I feel like going there at 11 and staying there till 11, that happens, even nowadays, that happens a lot. And, you know, luckily...
But that's what distinguishes the current co-working space from the previous ones. That right now, the creatives, they owned the space by the habit, by the way that they worked, by the routines. And today's offices are more like the co-working spaces are more like business offices than just the co-working spaces that they used to be.
So how are we going to look to? Intrigued by this, like how do we look to the past to predict the future, you know, for co-working, not Nostradamus?
So when you mean about the Nostradamus talking about the co-working, I have no idea what he said about it, but maybe we should do a different podcast about it. What I'm saying about looking the past to predict the future is that in the past we knew that the co-working was created by the freelancers for other freelancers. Currently, you see that the co-working spaces are more and more being overtaken by the corporations who are using them for their employees. So in my opinion, the future of the co-working industry will be that the co-working spaces will be in majority used by the corporations, or the corporations will make their offices look like the co-working spaces and try to put them this thing of a we call the, I don't know, creative, chaotic, being more interesting for the employees.
Have you covered your microphone? Because you're sounding different.
No, I didn't do anything.
Oh, that's it. Okay. Keep going like that.
Okay. Yeah, so what I'm saying is just that the co-working is losing its creativity. But it doesn't mean it's a bad thing. I'm just saying that we have to cope with the changes that are coming. And when you look at the changes which are coming to the market, I think we have to remember that actually what stays from the old co-working is the place. So because like when you go to the co-working, you're choosing the specific place. You still have the socialization, so you meet other people. And because of that socialization, you get this serendipity, chaotic, creative nudge a little bit. And I think that the future co-working spaces operators will have to figure out how to combine the two worlds, how to make both the corporate and the creative world work together in one space without being problematic. For example, in one of the spaces I was in, I had the habit that, you know, like sometimes I was walking barefoot on the floor with the carpet in the space, and On the other hand, there were the people from the corporate or from the business who were walking all the time in the business shoes, in their suits, and business shirts and their ties, and they really didn't like that there was somebody who was walking in the t-shirt and the socks around the offices. So you know, like, this might sound funny, but actually I think those small things will be the things that will have to be taken over by the co-working staff in the future, to make sure that everyone feels good there and that everyone wants to come to that space, even though it's very diversified.
I think people do this thing in business where they act like they think they should be businessy. And I've just met and read and followed so many people that are, it's like they confuse being professional with being businessy. And they think, oh, this is what a businessy, professional businessy place looks like. And actually that professional businessy space is the sort of corporate cubicle office factory thing that everyone kind of hates, but they think they slip back into this old paradigm of like, oh, if I'm going to, when I grow up, like, you know, in our company, when we grow up and we'll get lots of floors and we'll have lots of people working in cubicles, because that's what I think a business place looks like.
Yeah, definitely, Bernie, because it's one of the attributes of the business life. So like, if you were raised saying that, okay, that if you want to be business professional, you have to dress in suit, have a tie, wear a shirt, you know, like wear specific shoes, etc. Then when you grow up, you feel that if you're not doing this, you're not professional. On the other hand, I think that our generation is a generation that can change that. I'm for example, from a generation of people who are making jokes that when you look at person in a suit, it's you think of a successful person until you realize that the person works for somebody in the t-shirt or a blouser, right? So those kind of jokes and making the business a little less official, I think will change the industry.
Because there's always that confusion between like creative people. Like, there's not many creative people I know that like walk around in a polyester suit and a tie.
Yeah, definitely.
They kind of wear what they're relaxed in. And, you know, I know a lot of people who just wear, they don't really pay much attention to how they don't look scruffy and disgusting, but they just like put on what's nearest. Like, you know, just jeans and a t-shirt, because they don't have to think about it, because all their mental energy is on how they're going to build this thing or create this thing or talk to these people or, you know, this thing.
Yeah, I agree with you. And this is the kind of like my lifestyle. On the other hand, I understand the business people, because usually they, by working for somebody, they represent not only themselves, in contrast to the freelancers, but they also represent the brand that stands behind them as their employers, right? So I think that, you know, like, even though we might not like it that much, I think we have to be respectful of that, and we have to understand that, you know, like, if a banker comes because he's from this big international bank, he wants to make sure that people treat him seriously. And on the other hand, you know, like, for his supervisors, it's just like showing the respect to the company or to their customers. So there are different aspects to that, but I feel a lot better in this entrepreneur creative life, and that's why I chose it, and that's why I'm working in the co-working spaces for over a decade right now, and I don't feel like going back to the office, at least not the regular one. Yeah,
I've got two examples there about feet. So you said about walking around barefoot. There's Sanjay, who is an accountant here in our building. So he has like, his team is like 20 people, and he walks around barefoot all day, which I really appreciate. And then Brenny Brown, who's a famous she's a professor, Brenny Brown from the University of Texas. She studies shame and vulnerability, and now she's just grown. In the last decade, she's grown hugely after her TED talk and publishing a lot of books. And she tells a story about when she was talking at a business conference, about being authentic and shame and vulnerability and bringing your whole self to work. And the people that I'd hired her said, you have to wear shoes. So she was about to put her shoes on before, take off her clogs and put on her shoes before she went on stage. And she felt really uncomfortable. And then she just went on stage in her clogs because her whole thing was like, you know, how can I talk to people about being yourself if I'm not going to be myself? Why am I changing myself to fit in? And it's not like she was doing anything offensive. She just like, you know, dived into being herself. And that's the kind of spirit I really value.
Yeah, but you have to understand that everybody feels good in that role, that there are a majority of people who just like other people to tell them what to wear, how to behave, and they feel good at this situation.
There's so what are the last things we could look for the I'm always very scared of like going like the future, because we're not predicting the future. It's kind of what pointers are we looking for?
Well, I think we're just like dreaming about how this might look, and this is just one of the opinions. In the way I expect the future will change, and I think that the pandemic has accelerated this change, is that the co-working spaces might be used as a very good HR strategy for majority of the companies. Because people for the past 2 years have learned that they don't have to go to the office in order for the company to survive. The bosses also see that, but I think they're afraid that if they don't look at the people don't work. So I think that the co-working option might be actually quite a healthy solution for that problem of making the people not to commute 2 hours each way to work, and on the other hand, feel like they're still in the business environment. And once their employers will find out that working from a co-working space is not just working from a playground, but it's actually working from a business environment, it might also be easy. But it's maybe more of my hope than predictions, but I really think that this kind of a solution might be useful, especially that for the people who are recovering after COVID isolation. And I see many of them that they could really use some friendly environmental social space in which they could go on their tiptoes a little bit inside, outside, that they wouldn't feel that much official business stress around them.
I feel that I can see places that happening in London already, and that is my big hope as well. I was talking to someone from the local authority here in London where we're based, and there's some local authorities, which is like the municipality or the government, who are really very forward thinking even before COVID about encouraging open shared workspaces and what we call co-working, and how that would really benefit the local community and everything that goes with that conversation that, you know, both you and I are on the same page about. And then other local authorities are kind of missing, they haven't taken the initiative to instigate any shared workspaces or co-working spaces where they are, like, you know, where I am. And what will happen is people will then start going back into the city and back into London, not because they want to, because one of the things that's come out of a lot of research around COVID and how we work is people like going to work, but they don't like going on a commute. And because there's nowhere really in where I am in Redbridge in London, people will just go to work like they used to because there's nothing else. So if local areas offer places, it's a little bit chicken and egg, but if local places, either privately or run by the government, offer places for people to work, they'll stay there. And when people stay in the local area, that, you know, there's acres of research that when people stay in the local area, the economy thrives because we're spending our money with our local area, not with, you know, like in London, everyone runs into town and spends all their money in Pret-a-Manger. Yes.
I agree with you that there's a problem on this corporate management level or on the city governance level. And in my opinion, the responsible for that is the, you know, like when you say about this, maybe not urban myths, but actually those two biases that the co-working has on itself. And the first bias is that the co-working space is for the startups. And the second bias is that the startups are usually done by young people who are usually students or right after university. Where in reality, like when you go to the co-working spaces, there isn't that many startups doing their business. And second of all, majority of the co-workers are the people in their late 30s. And I think those are the two things that should come to attention to the decision makers, that the co-working spaces are usually occupied by people who are professionals in their businesses. Look, it doesn't matter that the businesses are creative, but they're professionals either in computer software, in graphic design, in accounting, in screenwriting, etc. But there are actually no younger or kids in the co-working areas. And I think that this should be the voice that should be heard by the decision makers.
That's a big part of what we're talking about, is educating people about co-working and shared workspace. And that, like in London, that's one of the out of all the conversations we've had with everybody, you know, who's connected to what we're doing, is whether it's, you know, space owners in the local in the London co-working assembly, or it's software companies in the local co-working assembly that a lot of you will know, or people from the local authority, is like educating people that, you know, there is, because we, you know, people listening to this podcast, and you and I, you know, have been in co-working for, you know, 10, 15, however many years. But for a lot of people, the first time they heard of co-working was, you know, because people must say it to you, and I know they say it to you, like you say co-working and they go like, do you mean like WeWork? They're like, no, not like WeWork, like this. And
yeah, but you have a point. Like WeWork was such a good brand, which was which had a good PR, that right now for majority of the people, the co-working is what was inside WeWork and companies like WeWork. So other, I don't know, Mindspace, Regus, Cities, Spaces, whatever. But yeah, that is what people imagine right now when they think about co-working.
Which is like thinking of a restaurant and thinking of TGI Fridays. But it's an education piece that we need to work on as an industry and a community to let people know that this is available for you, because it's, you know, it's a great thing. So where is the best place to find you online, or track you down, or have a coffee with you?
Okay, so coffee, probably the best place would be Warsaw. The majority of the time I spend here right now, but sometimes I'm also traveling to other cities. And the second best place, virtual, I think would be LinkedIn. Just to find me on LinkedIn, or email me, and catch up with me.
We'll put a link to your LinkedIn profile. I always say link too many times in the show notes. Okay. Thank you very much for your time today. I would love to keep on talking, but we've got to go. And I
thank you very much, Warren, for the invitation and for the conversation as well.
I'm looking forward to seeing you in London. I shall be to Warsaw again this year. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your time and attention today. If you go to coworkingassembly.eu and you'll find the podcast there, you'll find our blog content that comes out every week. And also there's a newsletter there where we send you news about events and projects projects we are organizing or taking part in or supporting. And that includes things from the German Co-working Federation, Co-working Spain, Co-working Europe, and Research Group for Collaborative Spaces. And of course, everyone's favorite library, the Co-working Library. So take care of yourself. Be careful out there. It is a jungle.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.